The National Institute of Mental Health reports that one in four adults, more than 57 million Americans, experience a mental health disorder in a given year. You could say that's a staggering statistic, but what it underlines is that our mental health exists in a sort of continuum. Anyone can suffer from mental illness at any time in their life. September is National Recovery Month, and part of the message that that observance is meant to promote is that people can recover from mental health and substance use disorders. Today I'm joined by Julie Hartle, Recovery and Resiliency Manager for Optum Health, which is contracted by Salt Lake County to provide mental health services. Today we'll be talking about county resources available to those struggling with mental illness and addiction and to hear about Hartle's personal recovery story. Julie Hartle, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Roger.
First off, I wanted to talk a little bit about the resources that are available to people in Salt Lake County who are struggling with depression and other mental disorders. How do public mental health benefits work, and what are those what are the resources available to people?
Well, there are actually a lot of resources available, and there are resources that are new to Salt Lake County or within the last couple of years. And some of those resources, the county has felt are very important. They actually act as diversion services so that maybe a person doesn't have to go inpatient.
Okay. I'm wondering, these are services that the county contracts with your organization or your company with Optum Health to provide. Can you explain what Optum Health does? I've read on your website that Optum Health is not a mental health or substance use disorder provider, but that Salt Lake County contracts with Optum Health to provide a full range of services. I guess I'm wondering kind of specifically what those that full range of services is.
Okay. So Optum has collaborated with the county to bring some services, you know, into Salt Lake County. So we act as not the provider of those services. We are one of the community partners, and we act as the administrator of programs. And some of the new programs that have been brought into the county since July of 2011 are what's referred to as the Wellness Recovery Center. That's a place someone can go when they're having mental health challenges and work towards recovery. We have a receiving center, which is a 23-hour facility where someone who's experiencing strong emotional, you know, reaction or some psychiatric symptoms can go, and in a very homey living room type environment can have access to social workers and doctors and certified peer specialists, persons like myself, lived experience, to help divert that particular, you know, crisis. And there's, of course, a crisis line. There's a warm line. A warm line is a line that people call in and they can talk to a certified peer specialist, again, someone who has lived experience that can offer a lot of compassion, who has a lot of community resources available right at their fingertips that can help a person work through the situation they might be in right now and just offer support and help them to kind of navigate the system.
You said you were a certified peer
specialist,
somebody who has had experience, and I want to get into that a little bit, your own experience a little bit later in the interview, but you're also the recovery and resiliency manager. What is your role specifically?
Well, my role specifically is to let people know that recovery from mental illness, even serious mental illness, is possible. That's something that a lot of people are not familiar with, that even a person with serious mental illness can recover. And so my message is a message of good news, and it's a message of hope that, you know, if you've been diagnosed with a serious mental illness, there is hope for you, and you can get to a place where you carry on with your life and you have an opportunity to live your dreams. It doesn't have to be a dead-end type of a sentence.
So there's some interesting stats on depression in Utah. The CDC reports that in the past year, nearly 9% of Utahns reported feeling symptoms of depression, and about 7% reported having thoughts of suicide. The state's youth suicide rate has been consistently higher than the United States rate for the last decade. And on average, every day in Utah, two youths aged 10 to 17 years of age are treated for suicide attempts. Is there any thinking as to why suicide rates in that age group might be higher here?
You know, what we know is in the Mountain West, all of the states in the Mountain West have a higher rate. And there are all kinds of studies being done. But the important thing to know is there are many programs that can help families, coaches, school teachers, to help identify who those youth are and to have the kinds of conversations that kind of de-shame suicide. And that's really important because if you can open the dialogue and you can open the door and talk to young people about that, the chances of that person, you know, actually going that direction are very much disempowered as opposed to empowered. You start talking about it, and it takes the energy out of it.
The more light you shine on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to talk about your personal story. You're someone who suffered from depression from a young age. Tell us about that and about your own recovery.
Well, I started having symptoms of mental illness very, very early in childhood. And I'm a survivor of sexual assault at a very young age. And I do think that that's the root of where some of my, you know, problems began. So as early as age 11, I had some pretty significant symptoms. Over time, you know, like everything, sometimes they were worse, sometimes they got better. And there were times when I did very well, but there were other times when I really, really struggled. I was not formally diagnosed until I was about 35 years old. And part of that is because I really resisted treatment because of the stigma associated with it. And I didn't want to be, you know, one of those people. Mm. But I really got to a place where I just could not function. I could not do the things I needed to do to support myself anymore. So there came a time when I was diagnosed. I had some rough years, but I started working on my recovery, which was really kind of a three-pronged approach. First, I needed to get manage my symptoms and get grounded that way. Then I needed to get myself back to work because I needed a purpose. And work had provided a lot of purpose for me. And then I needed to take charge of my physical health, which had really deteriorated during those years. And that last aspect of that, in the last year, I've lost 134 pounds.
Oh, congratulations.
And I've gone from being a person who had trouble making it out of my house in the morning to get to work without a lot of pain to participating in sprint triathlons this summer.
That's remarkable. You know, you talk about the, you mentioned the stigma associated with mental health. Statistically speaking, it's amazing that that stigma exists because of the number of people in the United States who suffer from, well, who struggle with with depression or mental health issues. I imagine that a lot of people resist seeking treatment because of that stigma the way that you did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what we as a society can do to try and address that.
Well, I think one of the primary things is just talking about it and making it so that a person doesn't have to feel shamed. And what I mean by that is, you know, there still is a little bit of a prevalence to blame people for their mental illness or to say, well, you must have done something and you know, that's not the case. I think by bringing awareness and shining light on it and talking about it, and not that you can really normalize it, because these are difficult experiences, and they're difficult experiences in individual ways, but just letting people know that, yeah, not everything is going to be great. There are times when you might be depressed, and there's treatment out there, and there are things that will, you know, that will support you and people that will support you. And just being very open and upfront about that, I think brings a lot of people, you know, out of the woodwork, for lack of a better term.
In your work and in your personal experience, I'm wondering what changes you've seen in the approach or the methods that are used to treat mental health disorders, mental health issues, depression, through, you know, well, I guess because you weren't diagnosed until you were 35, you wouldn't see this vast spectrum of difference. But have things changed quite a bit in the past, you know, however many years?
Yeah, they have. And actually, I was pretty, you know, I was pretty aware of what was available even when I knew I was mentally ill, but I was resistant to seeking the treatment that I needed. I knew what was out there. I would say the changes that I've seen are that we know that recovery is possible. That's huge. We know that people can get better, that, you know, you can have some hope for the fact that even though things might be very, very difficult for you right now, this too shall pass. You know, if you have people in your corner, you have people that will support you, you have access to good treatment, and probably one of the most important things is that you learn to advocate well for yourself. And if, you know, there are times when maybe you're not able to do that real well, that you have people in your corner that will advocate for you.
I think of recovery as a process. And saying, I know, you know, that we know that recovery is possible. Is it ever really over? I mean, are there endpoints for mental health issues? You say, all right, done. You know, I mean, I'll let you try and grapple that.
Everyone has their own individual experience. I will say, from my perspective, no, it's not done. I have reached a place where I feel grounded, where I am back to work. I'm working a job that I love. I have a lot of responsibility. I advocate for people. But is the job done? No. I feel a little bit like a juggler. A juggler that's well grounded, that has several balls in the air. And, you know, that's what every day is like for me, is, you know, I have to be very aware and very conscious of the things I need to do to stay in a healthy place. And I do those things. You know, some of those balls for me are medication. I still take medication. Another ball is therapy. I don't see a therapist real frequently, but occasionally it's important for me to touch base with that person. There are several things I enjoy doing that keep me grounded. Exercise has been the thing I've added in the last year. Gardening, painting. I'm a landscape painter. So, you know, there are several things that you put together that are kind of like this package that keeps you healthy. And you do have to put in place some things that will help you with symptom management, for instance. One of the things that's been really helpful for me is meditation and mindfulness. Now, those also help with my physical body, but they help keep me grounded as far as my thoughts are concerned. You know, those types of things were... I was made aware of those things through actually resources in the community. NAMI Utah, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, has a program called Bridges. It's a class for individuals who are mentally ill. I learned about a lot of those things in the Bridges classes initially. You know, I learned some of those things from the therapist I saw and from the doctor that prescribed my medications.
You know, actually, that's something I wanted to address. Speaking of medications, what are your thoughts as to their use and effectiveness?
I think one of the things to remember is typically medication will get you 60% of the way there, or maybe for some it'll get you 80 or 90. It just depends on the individual. And then it's up to you to find the things that will, you know, fill in the gap, that will make the bridge.
And but the big jump you have to take first is to actually seek help.
Exactly. You have to reach out. You have to ask for help. And that can be incredibly hard to do. It really can be hard to do. But, you know, there are several different ways that you can do that. And unfortunately, sometimes people do, what I kind of did was I got into a substance use problem because I knew that I needed help. And I started using substances to control my symptoms. And guess what? It worked for a little while, but then it's kind of like the snare.
Creates its own
problem.
I
really got caught, yeah. And so I've been in substance use recovery since 1998. But there are just a lot of other, you know, programs and things that you can do and people you can talk to that can help you find your way to services.
So where can people find more information? You know, let's say that they want to investigate this for themselves and learn more, or they want to seek help themselves. What can they do? How can they begin that process?
Well, I think there are several avenues for that. Sometimes it's just talking with a really good friend and telling that person some of the things that you're experiencing and asking them to help, you know, find resources. Again, NAMI is an excellent resource because they know they have NAMI mentors typically people with lived experience or family members with lived experience who can point you in the right direction. You know, if it's a situation where you're really feeling very strong emotions and you're feeling quite lost, you could always call the UNI crisis line. There are individuals there who are crisis workers. They know about all the community resources. There's also the opportunity to have them, once they're able to kind of help you identify some resources, to let you talk with someone on the warm line. The warm line is a person like me who's actually lived the experience, who can offer support and give you some ideas on how to problem solve this or how to talk to family and friends to get the support you need.
And this is a phone number?
Yeah. The crisis line can be accessed through 801-587-3000.
First off, let me say thanks very much for coming and sharing your story and telling us about the services available to people.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. And I would just like to say that there is help out there. And don't wait so long that you have to let part of your life go to get that help. I feel like I did that. And there's help. Ask for help. Don't be ashamed to ask for help. There's no shame in this. And there are a lot of services available in our community to help you.
That was Judy Hartle, Recovery and Resiliency Manager at Optum Health, sharing her personal mental health recovery story and talking about the mental health services available locally. You can find this and all of our feature interviews at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough. This is The Rundown. We'll be right back. And that's all the time we have this afternoon. The Rundown was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and the inimitable Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the program, we'll have a look at mental health from a different perspective, that of the returning veteran, with Lisa Stoddard, Suicide Prevention Coordinator at the Salt Lake City VA. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for joining us. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.